Confrontational t-shirts, safety pin pants, and parachute pants are a pretty familiar sight today, but when punks started wearing them on the streets of London and New York in the 1970s, they were startling and even threatening at times. A new exhibition at the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute traces the rise of punk and its adoption by some of fashion's biggest names in the decades since. It's called Punk Chaos de Couture, and it's on view at the Met now through August 14th, so you don't have all that much time to run to the Met to see it. I'm very pleased that it brings its curator, Andrew Bolton, back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
When did the style that we think of as being punk emerge in its full-blown form?
Well, I think that it began in New York in the early 70s, really, with people like Richard Hell and Patti Smith and Debbie Harry. But I think that the style that's become known as punk that we know of today really started to crystallize in London around 75 through Malcolm McLaren and Vivienne Westwood.
So they saw what was going on in New York and then came up with a British version?
Absolutely. I think what's interesting is that in a way, 430 King's Road, which was Malcolm and Vivienne's boutique, was this sort of cipher for influences, both from New York and but also from the streets of London. And I think both of that, they crystallized and commodified into the look of punk.
Were there certain specifics that defined the style? Richard Hell, who is considered a punk icon, sums it up in his essay in the exhibition catalog as acts of consciously making yourself up from nothing but your real insides. Well, that's very poetic, but I'm not sure I know what that really means.
Well, I think that with the essence of punk, and I think when I mean punk, I mean the first wave of punk, which is really around 73 to 79. I think the defining characteristic of punk was this idea of DIY or do-it-yourself. The idea of ripping your clothing, putting safety pins to hold it together, the idea of using found objects into your clothing, graffitiing and putting writing on your clothing. And I think all of this was something that very much became known as the punk aesthetic.
But as you point out, it may have started here, but got picked up in Britain. And I wondered why the British version seems so much more confrontational. We just heard the Sex Pistols, who talked of anarchy. Actually, there was real violence in England, a lot more real violence. If you went to a dance, there was a good chance that somebody was going to hit you during the dance. That wasn't happening very much here.
No, I think in New York, punk had more artistic and intellectual underpinnings in a way, whereas in London, it had more social and political underpinnings, which is why it was more anarchic, more chaotic, and in a way more angry. But I think England has a very long history of very aggressive street styles like Teddy Boys and Skinheads. And I think part of it is the class system in England and this rebelling against the system.
But the Teddy Boys wore Edwardian clothes and were violent. This is the total opposite.
Absolutely. I think what was extraordinary about punk is that nothing had happened before like it. It was so shocking when you saw them in the streets of London.
Well, what were the American punks rejecting?
Well, I think the American punks, I said, you know, it very much in a way came out of the Velvet Underground, and Andy Warhol, I think, is where punk originally began to emerge. Obviously, the hub of punk was CBGBs. And I think it was much more of a music phenomenon in New York, more than it was in London, which I think it was more of a fashion aesthetic.
So it became music and then art with someone like Andy Warhol. Did we also see it reflected in movies?
Yes, definitely. A lot of the underground movies very much was reflective of punk. And you even had people like Richard Hell and Debbie Harry starring in those particular types of movies. But I think that it was really CBGBs that became the sort of like hub of the punk movement.
And you've recreated the bathroom of CBGBs here in New York for this exhibit and Seditionaries, a boutique started by Malcolm McLaren and Vivienne Westwood in London. Was it important to give visitors to the exhibit a sense of those two places?
Yeah, I think for me, as I said, the hub of punk in New York really was CBGB's, and the hub of which was a nightclub, and the hub of punk in London was a boutique, 430 King's Road. So I think what I wanted to do was pinpoint the sort of contrasting experiences of punk in both those cultures by reflecting the sorts of the centers of both of those movements.
Now, there was also an androgynous aspect to the punk look. Men were wearing lipstick and eye makeup and dyeing their hair odd colors. Women were dressing more like men. again, just a way of challenging cultural stereotypes?
Yeah, I think that what was interesting about punk is how it did try and very much, particularly in England, was trying to challenge these normative conventions of beauty, of gender, and even of fashion. And they're very much about expanding those boundaries.
Well, you said that there was a do-it-yourself aspect to it. But then we have this boutique, Malcolm McLaren and Vivienne Westwood. So they picked up on what the kids were doing on their own?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really interesting point, because I think that what Vivienne and Malcolm did was commodify punk. T-shirts were selling in their stores for about £50 to £70, which was a lot of money in the mid-70s. So there was always a sort of commercial aspect to punk, as articulated by McLaren and Westwood.
And there was a debate at the time about this sort of thing. In fact, he went back even a little earlier, where you'd read in Rolling Stone people complaining that groups that were being critical of capitalism were having their records sold by major conglomerate record companies.
Absolutely. And I think that's a paradox of punk, I think. It started off as this this amateur movement, in a way, where anybody could be a musician, anybody could be an artist, anybody could be a fashion designer. But very quickly, it became commodified. And I think, in a way, sometimes lost its power after that. I think once a movement is defined, and once it becomes part of the commodified system, it does very much lose its power. And there's a famous quote by Mick Jones from The Clash, who says that that punk only lasted 100 days in its pure form. And we've tried to reflect that in the exhibition. So the exhibition's actually up for 100 days and closes on Wednesday.
Well, you have throughout the exhibit music, people speaking, and projected video clips of The Clash. Also Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten talking and performing. Because music was such an important part of this, are people looking at the musicians and saying, hey, I'd like to do that too?
I think so. And also what I wanted to do, I tried to avoid showing clothes by actual punks themselves. Because I think when you see a leather jacket or a ripped T-shirt or a pair of ripped trousers on a mannequin, it loses potency. You have to see it on the body in performance. So I was very, from the beginning, I did want all the images of punks or the clothing of punks to be on real people projected in images. So to me, that's when it gets its power.
And you do have these striking head treatments for the mannequins done by Guido Palau. Were they important to give some sense of unity across the exhibit and reinforce the theme?
Absolutely. And I think that what I tried to do was to avoid all the cliches of punk. So the idea of the mohawk, the leather jacket, the tight jeans, the Dr. Martens, that was really a cliche that came into existence in the 79 when punk really was over. So I tried to avoid all of those cliches and focus on punk in its purest form in the mid to late 70s. And the hairstyle that was very familiar then was basically like a DIY hairstyle where you got scissors and cut off your hair in this very shaggy, sort of spiky hairdo. And that's what we tried to reflect in the exhibition.
Do you agree with Hilly Crystal, who was the owner of CBGB's, when he says that in the UK there was more of a specific style, while in New York it was just what people were wearing?
I think so. And I took, strangely enough, Anna Swede, the designer around the show last night, who was very much part of that movement. And she also confirmed that when she went to London, it was interesting how it almost was like it became a uniform in London to be a punk. Vivienne and Malcolm's clothes, but also wearing trash bags, a very DIY sort of aspect. Whereas in New York, it was about thrift market clothing, T-shirts and jeans, really.
Well, perhaps that's because in Britain there had been the earlier thing where when the Beatles came along, suddenly you had Barnaby Street and you had that mod look and everybody was dressing in the same way with flowered shirts and bell bottoms. To some degree that happened in San Francisco. But in New York, you saw that and so many other things that you never had a feeling that was the style du jour.
Yeah, I think very much. I think that in New York it was much more heterogeneous in that way, in terms of people just wearing what they can find and not as homogenous as the look became in London.
My guest is the curator of an exhibit that's been at the Met. When did it open?
It opened in early May.
And we're catching it at the end of its run, unfortunately. It closes on the 14th. It's Punk Chaos to Couture. And Andrew Bolton put it together. You've been here before to talk about another exhibit. Did that lead to this?
Well, with punk,
The Alexander McQueen.
Well, I think partly in a way, because in a way, McQueen really was a punk in terms of how his approach to fashion. He was about provocation. He was about confrontation. He was about using fashion to expand boundaries of beauty. So in a way, you know, he was very much he took on the ethos of punk. So in a way, it was an extension of Savage Beauty.
And this is not even the second time that punk has been addressed at the Costume Institute. Didn't the Anglomania exhibit in 2006 include a room devoted to punk?
It was. We did a show at one particular room, which was based on the Gentleman's Club, which we had gentlemen in Savile Row suits pitched against punks in Vivian and Malcolm's clothing, very much focusing on this like class battle, the Hogarthian class battle. And that was much more about punk as an attitude. And with the exhibition on at the moment, it's much more punk as an aesthetic.
In your introduction to the catalogue, you write, "No other countercultural movement has had a greater or more enduring influence on high fashion, more than the Beatles and the hippies."
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, more than the hipster look today?
Absolutely. I think hip-hop has had a huge impact too. Exhibition about how many designers and how long punk has impacted on high fashion. The first designer was really Zonda Rose in 1977. So the height of punk in London, Zonda Rose was co-opting the aesthetic of punk for the catwalk. And that's continued to the day consistently. So even I was shocked about how much impact the punk aesthetic has had on high fashion.
You feature a Chanel suit with cigarette burns and a dress made out of garbage bags that's reminiscent of Marie Antoinette.
It's interesting. The Chanel suit is by Karl Lagerfeld. Now, I think what's interesting about it is that he takes on the aesthetic of poverty, the idea of rips and tears, and transforms it into a symbol of luxury, because it still holds all the trademarks of a traditional Chanel suit, such as the braiding, the chain to anchor the jacket, the quilted lining. So it very much has transformed the aesthetic of poverty into the aesthetic of luxury.
Do you think that designers have gravitated toward punk because it's of its emphasis on making a statement and individuality and challenging the status quo of what beauty is? Because so often fashion was simply a matter of recycling. You'd have designers looking back 20 years before and then doing a new variation, and then we'd go through that whole process again. This was seemed to be a break with all of that.
Well, I think when designers try to imbue their fashions with a sort of youthful rebelliousness, they often look to punk. And I think what's interesting is street style isn't quite as potent as it used to be. I think where you're seeing ideas of individuality and originality is now happening on the catwalk more than the street, unfortunately. I think that the power of street styles is becoming less, and you really are seeing the idea of originality and more on the catwalk.
In the catalog that accompanies the exhibit, photos from the 1970s are paired with photos of couture clothing from different fashion collections of the last 20 years. Has the visual language of punk remained pretty much unchanged over the last 40 years?
I think what's happened, and I think often when high fashion co-ops street cultures, it becomes sanitized. I think that the rawness and the initial subversive energy of punk is often lost when it's transformed into high fashion. It becomes much more aesthetic.
Why do you think that street style is losing some of its potency?
I know there's much more of an emphasis on aspirational dressing. I mean, even 10 years ago when I moved to New York, there was more of a heterogeneous look to New York, and now things are becoming much more homogenous. And you're seeing that really across in the West. I wonder whether we now need to go to other Eastern cultures or non-Western cultures to see really true street style. I think for street style to have any authenticity, it needs to rebel against something. And I think, like in England at the time, they're rebelling against the establishment with punk. And I think there needs to be something to rebel against. So I think perhaps that's the reason why street style is not becoming quite so sort of potent.
Well, is the hipster look today street style?
Again, the hipster look, it often becomes a uniform. I think early on, it's something that seems original. And you go to Williamsburg now, and everybody's sporting
because
their goatee.
Maybe the difference is we're not hipsters aren't rebels in the way that the punks, the early punks were.
And there's a self-consciousness, I think, to like hipsters. But I think, you know, for street style to have as I said, to have any authenticity and to have any potency, it needs to be rebelling against something of usually the status quo in the establishment.
Have you spoken to any of the people who were there at the beginning? What is their reaction to this long history and to the exhibit?
I think it's been mixed. You know, some people are very proud that the Metropolitan Museum is doing an exhibition on punk and giving such focus to the movement. I think others are very proprietorial over punk. There's a strong ownership of punk. And I think partly it's because people can't agree with what punk's about. I think that's why punk is so extraordinary. Is that I think it began as an emotional impulse, and it continues to engage people emotionally. So as a result, there's been no consistent sort of definition of punk, which is why it's been so, in a way, quite a controversial exhibition.
We have a slideshow of images from the exhibit on our show page at WNYC.org. But if you want to see the whole thing in the flesh, so to speak, the exhibit Punk Chaos de Couture is on view at the Metropolitan Museum's Costume Institute now through August 14th. My great thanks to its curator, Andrew Bolton, for being on our show again.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, my third time.